Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Blog Talk Radio Affiliates. Now today we have a very special show in store for you today. My co-host Jima and I will be discussing marriage and its relevance in the 21st century. As we move into another year of celebrating Valentine's Day, I want to ask the simple question: is marriage becoming obsolete? So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family. Tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. And so for those of you listening to Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Now, according to the Washington Post, Egyptian soldiers cleared protesters from Tahrir Square as pockets of tension bubble up in Cairo. Now, the soldiers evicted demonstrators from parts of the square on Sunday as they tried to restore a measure of normalcy to the Egyptian capital. But tensions flared elsewhere as police and civil servants took advantage of the country's revolutionary tumult to press their own demands for change. Now, Prime Minister Sakif presided over the Egyptian government first cabinet meeting since President Mubarak's abrupt resignation on Friday. Now, a concern now in the cabinet is security, to bring security back to the Egyptian citizens, he said at a press conference. There's a lot going on. I think the movement, I hear people always say that the movement would be televised. This time it seems like the movement was not only televised, but it was Facebook, it was Twitter, it was blogged, it was everything. So my hats off to the people of Egypt, because of the fact that they took back control of their country and basically wanted to make sure that they were really serving the people. In other news, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that President Obama's budget plan would cut the deficit by $1.1 trillion over 10 years. Now, the White House budget proposal for 2012 would shave off about a little bit over $1 trillion. Off the federal deficit over the 10 years. And it's incumbent upon you to make sure you go out there and look at what's happening with this new budget proposal, because there are going to be a lot of different cuts. And then you'll also see the focus of the administration is normally when you have a budget that is about to be able to take a vote on this budget, you'll be able to see which direction the president is going. And so if you're in business, you'll be able to kind of find out, you know, where should you be channeling your energy to make sure that you'll be able to maximize your profits in the long term. Now, there's been a lot of talk about cutting certain programs and adding funding to others. What they like to say in the White House is investing funding in other places. So I would encourage you to go out and take a look at the new budget proposal to make sure that you understand which direction the country is going in. The Wall Street Journal also mentioned that the cuts the administration will propose in its budget proposal on Monday would hit a number of federal agencies and programs, but fall short of some of the spending reductions congressional Republicans would try to push through the White House, through the House of Representatives next week. It also goes on to say that if enacted, the cuts would bring the country's deficit to around 3% of the country's gross domestic product by 2017. This is higher than the 2.3% threshold that the Deficit Reduction Commission proposed and short of the administration's target for 2015. But nevertheless, again, I encourage you to go out there and really get engaged into what's happening with this particular budget, because, again, a lot of different agencies are cutting back. A lot of states are cutting back in some areas. They're not cutting back in all areas. So if you really want to understand where the dollars are being transferred to, it's incumbent upon you to ensure that you're going to be you understand where the dollar is going. Now, each week I do a segment called Moments of Reflections. And this week's moment of reflection is going to be about Valentine's Day. Yeah, that's right, Valentine's Day. So, because Valentine's Day is February the 14th of every year, and I, like many of you, celebrate it religiously, I want to kind of get a little background, a little understanding of where this man-made holiday came from. So I did a little research out there, and it turns out that the History Channel had quite a bit of information with respect to Valentine's Day. In fact, it says that the history of Valentine's Day and its patron saint is shrouded in mystery, but we do know that February has long been a month of romance. Saint Valentine's Day, as we know it today, contains vestiges of both Christian and ancient Roman tradition. So who was Saint Valentine, and how did he become associated with this ancient rite? Today, the Catholic Church recognizes at least three different saints named Valentine or Valentinus, all of whom were martyred. Now, a martyr is somebody who suffers persecution and death for refusing to renounce a belief or cause, often religion. So one legend contends that Valentine was a priest who served during the 3rd century in Rome when Emperor Claudius II decided that single men made better soldiers than those with wives and families. He outlawed marriage for young men, his crop of potential soldiers. Now, Valentine, realizing the injustice of the decree, defied Claudius and continued to perform marriages for young lovers in secret. Now, when Valentine's actions were discovered, Claudius ordered that he be put to death. Other stories suggest that Valentine may have been killed for attempting to help Christians escape harsh Roman prisons when they were often beaten and tortured. According to one legend, Valentine actually sent the first Valentine greeting himself. While in prison, it is believed that Valentine fell in love with a young girl who may have been his jailer's daughter, who visited him during his confinement. Before his death, it is alleged that he wrote her a letter, which he signed, "From Your Valentine," an expression that is still in use today. Now, although the truth behind the Valentine legend is murky, the story certainly emphasizes his appeal as a sympathetic, heroic, and mostly important romantic figure. It is no surprise that by the Middle Ages, Valentine was one of the most popular saints in England and France. Now, so let's reflect on this for a minute. Now, I found this story to be very interesting, particularly around the idea that Claudius ordered that Valentine be put to death for performing marriages. So it made me wonder If Valentine were alive today, whether he would be pleased with the state of marriage. In fact, I wonder would he say, my dying was in vain. Which brings me to today's topic. Is marriage obsolete? When we return, we're going to open up the phone lines and take some calls. Also, we'll solicit the wisdom of my co-host, Jima. So I would love to get your comments. So remember to join the conversation. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number to call is 323-580-5712. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment. Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Okay, welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. And before we take some calls, I'd like my co-host Jima to weigh in on a few questions. Now, Jima is the director of training of TaylorMade and the author of the famous Ask Jima blog. For her latest post, go to askjema.blogspot.com. That is askjema.blogspot.com. So, Jima, before we get started, I would like to normalize the conversation by working within the same definition of marriage. So, what's your definition, in your own words, define marriage?
Marriage, in its most simplest form, I will say it is the combination of two people coming together where they have declared their love for one another, their commitment to one another more than anything, and that there would be no other people that they will be committed to emotionally, physically. They have committed themselves to each other. So marriage is a coming together of two people to live together, to grow together, all of those things.
Okay. So we're working with the definition of a context of love and commitment, right?
Yes.
Okay. So is it really going to hurt or help a relationship if two people that already love and commit themselves to each other to get married?
Is it really going to help it or hurt it?
Uh-huh.
Well, the answer is yes and no. I mean, I don't think it's going to hurt it if they decide to get married. And I think it will help them if they decide to get married. So I think the marriage of two people coming together and being committed to one another has a scriptural base. So for those that believe in that, then they feel as though they are obeying and being connected to their religious beliefs and their spiritual beliefs of being married and being one man to one woman type situation.
Mm-hmm. There are components in some religious texts that said that they have more than one wife. So what's your take on marrying more than one person?
Well, my take is that's not what I believe. And if that is what someone else believes, then that's between them and who they serve and what they believe. It's not what I believe, so I'm beholden to what I believe.
So
if somebody else wants to have 10 wives, and I just find it odd that I think the men can have multiple wives, but I don't think women can ever have multiple husbands.
So that's a good point. So when you mention scripture and you talk about the fact that it's scripture based and obeying what they believe, and so I'm asking the question: are you talking about the Bible?
I believe I'm talking about the Bible. Yes.
Okay. So in the context of then scripture and people with scripture being scripture based, there are components in the Bible which you believe that talks about more than one wife.
That is true.
So, I mean,
there's components in the Bible that talk about slavery as well, but I'm not going to go out and endorse that.
But what I'm saying is, though, you mentioned that there are components in there about what you believe. So if a man believed that, why not be okay with that?
I'm not okay with it. That's why I said what I believe. If someone else has a different belief system and they are operating in their own belief system and it is working for them, they can continue to move forward. That's not an area in which I want to work in.
Okay.
I that's just not for me.
Okay. We're gonna go to the phone lines and we're gonna see what some of our people out here on the world wide web are gonna be talking about. Okay, caller, last four, 6778. You're on Current Events with Patrick Cook. What's your question or comment?
Good afternoon.
Hey, how's it going?
Things are going well. My wife is not listening. My one wife is not listening, so I can comment.
Okay.
There are, you know, more than 30 references biblically to polygamy in the Bible, and God used those people to move the people of Israel forward and to pass a message to the people to obey or to repent, or he sent them with messages of punishment. So when people say, oh yeah, I follow marriage and it's one person and it's biblical, I get what they're saying in the context of our Judeo-Christian Western traditions. You know, from the New Testament standpoint, there aren't as many references to polygamy or more than one wife, or even references to a man that has more than one wife. But, you know, we know it still exists, and I just think we get caught up on that because of our own experiences in Western society. You know, here in the U.S., we get caught up on that.
So that's a good point, Paul. And what I'm trying to say is that when we talk about, and as Jima said, that we talk about issue, we're going to move on to a different area here, but when we talk about scripture and believing a component, why is it that we just take a part of it and not all of it? That's what
Oh, it's absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely, you know, a part of what we choose. If you choose to be a Methodist, you believe, I mean, a lot of people don't know what their denomination means, what they're signing up for. So, I mean, when people say they believe, you have to ask the second question. Well, what is it that you believe? What denomination are you? Are you a Protestant? Are you a Catholic? Are you agnostic? Are you, you know, Orthodox Jewish? Because there are some Orthodox Jews that still subscribe to polygamy or polygamous type of traditions or other traditions that we as Christians still don't adhere to. We don't eat, you know, we don't eat halal. I mean, we don't eat kosher, or halal is the Muslim term, but we believe that that those things and those instructions in the Old Testament are valid and true instruction from God, but we just don't believe that we're still, because of our denomination and because of our belief structure and choices and free will given us by God, we just don't believe that those things are as relevant to us and our salvation.
Which goes back to my point about picking and choosing certain components out of the Bible which we find convenient. So, you know, in the context of marriage and the fact that if we're talking about, you know, we're getting married or we're doing this marriage, we're going through this ceremony because it's scripturally based, I'm just asking the next question, then why is it not that okay for people to have more than one wife? We're going to talk about a scriptural definition of being married.
I hear what you're saying, and I think it's, you know, for some people it's convenience, but I don't think it's that pat. I think it is scripturally relevant, mm-hmm. you know, the relevance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for me to say that word and drink at the same time. It's, you know, it's the relevance. You know, it's not relevant for me as a Baptist to follow Jewish law, although I respect the Jewish law, customs, traditions, and holidays. I respect them, but it is not relevant for me toward my end game. And my end game is, you know, I want my eternal soul saved. So, you know,
right.
Not that it's inconvenient for me. I think it would be a more structured lifestyle if I had my family living under the law. It would be easier to manage my family because I could always blame the structure. But, you know, as far as family traditions, it's not just a convenience thing because it's just totally inconvenient. It was inconvenient for me to find my own wife.
Mm-hmm.
Had I followed, you know, old family tradition where it wasn't an arranged marriage, but it was a family-approved marriage,
mm-hmm.
that would have been more convenient for me.
So what I asked Jima already what her definition of marriage was or is. So I'm asking you, what's your definition of marriage?
Life partner bound by love and commitment.
Okay.
You know, at the same level. I mean, my wife respects the institution of marriage as much as I do. So it's not easy for us to quit each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And our family backgrounds are similar, and our family, you know, upbringings and traditions associated with our Black American tradition of marriage are similar, and so it makes it more straightforward. I mean, and our marriage is not offended or endangered by other folks' definition of marriage, be it
mm-hmm.
same-sex marriage, multiple partner marriage, or any of that. I mean, because our tradition is ours.
Right.
And we can tell our gospel, and people are free to accept it or not.
Okay.
People can say they don't believe in the sun, but it comes up in the morning. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then we've done our thing.
So it's only fair for me to give my definition of marriage, since I asked you and I asked my co-head. So I'm going to say, to me, it's a very complicated question. There are many dimensions to it. There's an emotional side, there's a sexual side, there's a religious side, which you mentioned there, there's a cultural side, and to me, most importantly, there's a financial side to marriage. And so I believe is if you ask 100 people about what marriage is, you'll probably get 100 different definitions. In fact, once upon a time, it was how women ensured their financial security. They got the fathers of the children that way. They gained access to a host of different legal rights. But that was 40 years ago, and that was after the feminist movement established their rights in the workplace, and a generation after the divorce rate has peaked, and a decade of all kind of women liberation movements. It seemed like to me marriage is is no longer necessary. So, what do you think? Is marriage obsolete? Jima, is marriage obsolete?
No, marriage is not obsolete. No, it's not obsolete.
I mean, it hasn't served its purpose. I mean, you know, then in the beginning, people got married because of, you know, the women didn't really have a lot of legal rights. They didn't have health care. They didn't have, you know, financial security. But nowadays, young women are educated. They are making just as much more money. Less ideological. They live longer. They're the main breadwinners. So the fact that we have all of these tools and bathroom cleaners and washing machines, why do a woman need a husband nowadays?
Well, let me speak. Hold on. Slow up. Now, here's the thing. All those things you said, okay, and mm-hmm. all those things can happen with or without a husband. What a woman has to decide and what a man has to decide is, it's of course, just like any other relationship, it's personal. I was single, independent, on my own house, running a, you know, million-dollar company, doing whatever I was doing. People will always say, wow, why are you having kids yet? Or I can't believe you single, or, you know, as a black woman, you don't have any kids. And I would always say, well, I don't have a husband. Because for me, to do it and to do it right, I wanted to have a husband first. So there's still a need to have a husband. For people like, there are still women out there like me that believe, just like I do, that they would prefer to have a husband, to be married before they have children. Because that's when they have and believe, as what your caller was stating, in their belief system and their cultural, that two parents, you know, can do such a much better job than one. Not saying that one can't. But, you know, the burden is shared when there's two people. So I didn't want to have to do it all by myself. Not saying that I couldn't. Not saying I didn't have the ability to. But it's not something that I wanted to do.
That's perfectly understandable. In fact, if you were going to join a union and you wanted to raise a child, I think you're right. I mean, that has a lot of, you know, validity to it. But what about the single woman that were doing all those things you just talked about, running a million-dollar company? Have their own house, have their own car, making their own six-figure incomes, and don't want a baby or a child. So why should they get married? I mean, why is society saying, you're not a success because you're not married? Or why are people holding them to a standard that says they must be married?
I think people are really drawn toward the social aspect of it. And, you know, we do things out of habit. And, you know, old habits are hard to break on the one hand. You know, a lot of people really want to see people partnered up. And there's studies that, you know, studies of those babies in Bosnia and Croatia, those babies that did not get hugs ended up with social issues. Or we always looked at people in that way that were loners, always acted strange. And then the studies proved that out. If they were not having human contact, they exhibited antisocial behavior. And so marriage is just one of those things that's been around. And with warts and all, even when women did not have rights in the greater society, and there's still societies where women do not enjoy freedoms at all, you know, especially in the Mideast, where there are so many women that have been left to live with siblings because they are unmarried and their husbands have vanished. So the independent women in our society that can choose or that wish to wait and choose to have a husband, because it's socially acceptable, it's a part of those laws and norms and mores that we adhere to and try to follow. The great thing now is that they have, you know, those external societal rights and the ability to earn as much or more than the man. It just makes the union that much stronger. As a people, we should, as African Americans, I can't speak for other folks that have experienced racism, sexism, or various combinations of discrimination. I think we should understand that even better, because, you know, you just can't undo, you know, several decades of wrong and then expect everyone to jump on board. Those statistics that you cited about marriage and divorce, the divorce rate skyrocketing. You know, you left out the illegitimate children, which would come from the phrase that they were children born not of a merit, so they're not even legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Those rates have skyrocketed. Teen pregnancies mm-hmm. have skyrocketed. Teen pregnancies to term has skyrocketed. So, you know, I just think those are just byproducts of us not really knowing how to behave with an equal partner. We see that in corporate America, where they just can't accept nor really fully embrace the human capital that we bring to the table. I think men and some women just can't take it. They can't take it if a man is not living up to that preconceived notion of a man being a breadwinner, Ward Cleaver type guy. And there are men that just can't live with a woman that out-earns them.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have those hiccups in our society where we have divorces, where people don't know how to talk through those issues. And they're just not committed to marriage because they come to a union and they have different definitions of what that union means to them individually. And so,
here's what I hear is the contract what solidifies the marriage, the legal contract, not the bond that these two have joined together. It's not the fact that you trust me and that you love me, that we can do this thing together. It has to be the legal tie. So when the man and the woman are educated, young, professionals, committed to careers, friends, and their relationship, isn't it true that legally tying them down is what makes them coalesce? What makes them? Because before that contract is in place, they don't trust each other.
Well, some people need that contract to tie them down. Others just need, you know, a full, open, and honest discussion about that partner's idea of marriage and where they want to go in life. If I'm choosing a life partner, I've done it before incorrectly. You know, I need to understand that her definition is the same as mine. I can't say. I think a lot of people make mistakes saying, okay, close enough. Her definition is close enough to mine that we can make this work, when it's not going to be the legal paperwork. It's not going to be the housing situation. It's not going to be financially. If we both look at marriage differently, then we're going to have some issues. Foundational issues.
But that legal paperwork in its purest form gives you access to things you don't have access to without it, such as insurance. If you're a person who's in between jobs or, you know, whatever you got going on in your life, and, you know, your partner, your fiance or whatever, good job, got all the benefits, whatever, you can't get none of that until you become. So that contract, that whatever, however you term it, it does give you some things that you don't get if you don't sign on the dotted line, basically. So there's some benefit to going ahead and getting married, because it gives you some benefits. So the contract is important.
That's a very, very good point. And so that's why I wanted to talk about the fact that the contract is what binds the relationship, not really the vows or anything. The legal document is what people are going towards. And so if that's the case, then when you have universal healthcare, like we're moving in the direction of, when you have the fact that those benefits can be negotiated inside some other contract, so there's no need for marriage anymore then, because those things that you just mentioned are already available or will become available to you in the coming years. So the fact that you can get health care without a marriage, the fact that you can get out, you know, certain your own 401k with or without a marriage, the fact that you can create your own, you can go out there and purchase a house, you can get a job, you can have a career. I mean, all of these things you can get without having a husband. So the husband or that marriage institution has served its purpose. There's no need to do it anymore.
You're planning in your argument.
That's a, That's a good argument. But we can look to those societies that already have those things. You know, we can look to Denmark. We can look to Holland. We can look to Norway. We can look to Canada that have those things where a single person that graduates from high school has access to health care, has access to jobs because they're a socialized society, has access. If you really don't want to work, you can still get public assistance enough so that you're not homeless in certain provinces in Canada. But marriage still exists. And so I think it's, and those are countries that I don't believe are as strong as the U.S., in terms of their religious organizations. I don't believe that there are as many mega churches in all of Canada as there are in Dallas alone. So I wouldn't blame the religious aspect. I just think that socially people want that structure. I mean, your children want structure, and adults, as we become adults, we want that structure of marriage that traditionally is one man and one woman in Western society. In Middle Eastern society, that'd be Southeast Africa, you know, it becomes important for a young man in his late teens to begin to acquire wives and livestock,
mm-hmm.
because that's the social order and that's the social structure. So even with their foreign aid that they receive, men still acquire wives, and wives still want to be attached to a husband with several wives. And so I just think we can do better. but I did. I do like your point about the Valentine story with regard to the letter that was written from jail. I absolutely believe that myth is the true myth of Valentine's Day.
Absolutely. I mean, we go out and we celebrate all these man-made holidays with really not having a true understanding of where it came and where it stemmed from. So I just wanted to kind of shed light on that.
I appreciate that one.
We're gonna take another break here in a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, and today we're talking about is marriage obsolete? This is basically in the fact that Valentine's Day is coming up, and we have all of these traditions in the United States, and a lot of people think that, you know, marriage is something that's scriptorial based, and then you have people that are saying that, you know, it was created because of it provided women more benefits. And I want to challenge those arguments today. And so when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines, and we're going to take some more calls, and we're going to talk about this. We'll be back in a moment.
Mr. Cook.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced-price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Okay, welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We've been talking about marriage. Is it becoming obsolete? Basically, I posed the question, the fact that, you know, I wanted to define what marriage is. We got a couple of definitions, and then we mostly are talking about lifetime partnerships. We're talking about love. Some people even mentioned the fact that it was tied closely to, you know, their religious beliefs along the lines of benefits and things of that nature. So, and I just want to challenge some of those, that ideology, because of the fact that though the history behind getting married and the dynamics of why people got married has changed a lot over the past, you know, several decades. And so I wanted to, you know, to challenge the callers or the challenge the listening audiences out there. You know, is marriage now obsolete? Now, do we even need it? I mean, it's a legal contract. It's almost like applying for a job. You get a job, and then if you, you know, don't do well, then you just go to another job. I mean, you know, it, because it's a contract in place. So I wanted to kind of pose the question around those lines to see what we're calling things. So, again, I'm going to take some more calls here. Okay. Carl, you still there, 6778?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I wanted to challenge something real quick. I want, for the record, I'm not against love or even against bonding for life. In fact, that I am married. You know, if that's just the new way, you know, that's just the way things turned out. It's only the public contract that I'm questioning. And why does a private relationship need a public sanction?
Well, historically, you cannot legislate good behavior, but you can try to legislate against abuses. And so there were, I'm sure historically there were some abuses. You know, I work with a lot of public organizations dealing with their HR payroll issues. And so there are times where, you know, back in the early 90s, there were people that were just so against direct deposit. They didn't want direct deposit. And I just could not figure out why. This saved the company lots of money. This was an efficient way to do things. You have a bank account. If not, here's an opportunity for you to get a bank account and fund it directly. And all of us that were into trends and futurology say, oh, yeah, this will be a good thing, because at one point you'll be able to pay all your bills automatically.
Mm-hmm.
But husbands didn't want that pay stub sent in the mail. As they didn't want their wives to know how much money they made.
Interesting, interesting.
That was one what I thought was abusive. It's like, you know, if you've got a spouse and you can't tell the spouse how much money you make, that's pretty crazy. The next thing was that they didn't want to see those child support payments coming out of that check stub.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while that's the same level of dishonesty, I understood that excuse better. But so I just think that the legislation, you know, does as much as possible to try to prevent against abuses, and just to ensure common sense things can occur. Abuses by the insurance company saying that, hey, this is your wife, but so what? You know, we can't offer her coverage because she's not an employee of that company. And these are things that, you know, unions negotiated first and then companies gave to non-union personnel. But I just think the law changed to provide more structure to folks, keep companies from chasing a profit margin and thereby abusing people.
Okay, so I want to address this word. I think you and Jima mentioned, and that word was commitment. And it's a word you hear a lot at weddings and from people who are about to get married. They say, "I'm getting married to express my commitment to my partner." Now, commitment in this context is supposed to mean dedication or loyalty. The word has other meanings, however. If you commit a crime, you may be committed to prison. Once you are in prison, however, you wouldn't say that you are committed to your cellmate. It isn't loyalty and dedication that keeps you together. A more accurate description is that you are in prison together. Now, the question is whether commitment can be nailed down forever in a public ceremony. talking about this public contract, right? Is it like capturing a butterfly and putting it into putting nails in them and putting them into this frame, right? And to preserve it, you're killing it. So, Jim, I'm going to pose this question to you. Can commitment, i.e. the voluntary kind, really be pinned down forever without turning it into some type of punishment?
Well, I'm not quite sure I completely understand the question, but I think commitment is only as relevant as the person who's committed. So by that I mean, as long as I, Jima, am committed to whatever it is I say that I'm going to do, whether that's my marriage, whether that's how well I'm going to do on my job, whether that's to lose them 50 pounds, if it only goes as far as I will take it. So my level of commitment to something has as much to do with me as me feeling as though the person I'm committed to we're committed to the same things. So what makes why I say commitment and love when it comes to marriage is that we're committed to being better people because we see we're better together than we were apart. We're committed to growing together, to raising a family together, to growing a business together. Not that we couldn't do any of those things separate, but together, being committed to that focal point, it's going to have greater benefits because it will be with someone that we love and that we care about, that we respect, that we honor, that we want to have the best of. So if I can assist you in being the best of, then I want to be a part of that. I'm committed to that process.
Absolutely. I like what you said. I mean, you said the fact that you're talking about this commitment is really internal to you, right? It means that you have to put something into this. Do you agree? Is that what I got from that?
Yeah, it's committed on both ends, yes.
Okay, so why is it then that the public contract plays a role in the marriage as opposed to you saying I commit to somebody else and then that's all you need? Why do you need this external contract? Why do you need this paper that says that we're married? Why not do that, which is exactly what you said? I'm going to commit to you because I'm going to show you that. Why do I need that legal document then, Jima?
Like I said, that legal document as it stands today, until times catch up with where your mind is, that legal document has certain benefits that personally one could not have gotten had that not been in place. So the legal document still carries with it some benefits. So until everything kicks in, until all things become as they, you know, eventually will be, that's the benefit of it. Now, 20 years from now, I don't know what the benefit would be, except for me, it would still be from where I believe two people, a man and a woman, who's committed to each other, both spiritually, financially, sexually. I'm committed to you. I'm giving my heart, my body, my soul to you. I don't expect you to go out and do anything else. Not to say that the paper would keep you from doing that, but you might think twice before you do because of the paper. So, you know, for me, regardless of what happens in the world, based on what I believe and what I've been taught and what I read for myself, what I've interpreted, I think marriage, in terms of two people to coming together, fits well in my belief system of who I am.
So it's basically that binding contract what changes everything for you. I understand. Okay. Because before the binding contract, then the relationship you had with someone, it really meant nothing because of the fact that you didn't really believe or trust in him to be able to do all those things you just mentioned until the contract was there. Am I reading that properly? Okay.
Did the contract ratify the existing belief structure?
Thank you.
So
yes.
Oh, you agree.
so without the contract, then though all those things you mentioned were pretty much null and void. I mean, you didn't believe in the system that was in place or the system between you and that individual until that contract was in place.
No, the contract for me personally was a direct benefit. period. It did not change how I felt about my husband or my circumstances. It only made it stronger because now I could really receive benefits of being married to someone, because with that contract came some benefits, period. Without it, I did not have them. So for me personally, the contract, as you're talking about it, in the sense in which you're speaking of, was beneficial for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Bottom line.
Understand. Okay, so you were able to get something from the relationship. Understand, okay. All right, so now...
No, I was able to get something from the contract that you keep talking about.
Oh.
I was already getting things from the relationship. The contract allowed me to get even more things.
Oh, okay. So if those things, and this is the question that the context I'm in now, is it becoming obsolete, i.e., the fact of the matter is, if those benefits that were available to you prior to you receiving, the benefits on the contract, if they're becoming available to you now without that contract, there's no need to get married then. Based on that scenario you talked about, the fact that, you know, you have the relationship, it's internal. Whether you commit now, the benefits that you receive because of the contract, well, they're going to be available for you here soon. So there's no real need to have this contract in place, because it's really not going to give you any benefits. I understand.
That's not what I said.
Okay,
I don't know what you understand.
So break it down for me one more time. And I mean, the fact that you mentioned that internally, that you it's your commitment, not the contract. But the contract is beneficial because you're able to get some benefits from the contract. And my point is, if you're getting those benefits without the contract in place, then why would you need the contract? Why would you need to get married?
Because from what I believe about marriage is that it is the joining of two people with common goals, common vision, and that. And what I've been taught, marriage between a man and a woman, and when you come together to procreate, have children, you come together to build a foundation, you come together to make, what's the word I'm looking for, not money, but you're building wealth for your children and your children's children. So there's some things that I believe in, that's in the Bible, both Old and New Testament, that I find that I can only do well if I'm in a committed married relationship.
And that only
not that it could not happen some other kind of way, but for me,
right,
it has to be. I would have to be married,
right? Which means that is that contract. You couldn't do all of those other things you mentioned without that contract in place. You couldn't have a go into business with somebody, love that person, you know, do all procreate, all of those other things you talked about. You couldn't do those things unless that contract was in place, because of what you was taught and what you believe.
You can. It's just called shacking.
Exactly.
No, but that's a man-made shack is a man-made term. I mean, people do these things and are still successful without that contract. So
over and seven.
Exactly. So I'm not real sure, you know, why we put so much.
But the one thing they haven't been at, but the one thing they haven't done is they haven't done what, you know, Oprah ain't got no kids.
Well, it's not because she don't want it. I think it's a physical limitation right now. It don't have anything to do with her not trying or not, you know, being able. I think it's a physical limitation of her body that won't allow her to do that.
If she wanted to, she could adopt me tomorrow.
Exactly.
Right.
I am available.
So, I mean, so Oprah understands the fact that that contract is not necessary to do all those things you talked about. All those things still exist in their relationship, and she understands it's not necessary to have that.
Right, and you can believe that. If you don't want to get married, and you want to do all these other things, you can. But if you want to get married, then you're going to find somebody that believes what you believe about marriage. Not believe some, as John stated earlier, not about you kind of believe what I believe. You need somebody that's kind of on the same page with you, or it's not going to work. So trust me, if you're in a relationship and you're wanting to go one way and you're the other person wanting to go another way, y'all not going the same way together. So even though there's no marriage in terms of the license and the last name and whatever all goes into that happening, you know, you still have people that can live together, and that's what all they want. They don't want to get married. They don't believe in marriage. They think when people get married, they get divorced right away. There are people that honestly believe that. I don't believe that. So because I don't believe that, I believe in the institution of marriage. Two people coming together, whatever. Somebody else may not believe that, and that is perfectly okay. They live their life that way. I do not think that marriage will ever be obsolete because there's somebody else that thinks just like I do.
Right.
I think that we're drawn to the structure, and standards are set, and we study, you know, history so that we don't repeat it. And I think that there is good in structure, and the law helps us to accomplish those things that we talk about. That a lot of those things we can do, but the law helps us do those things better. In terms of the legal structure, you know, the legal benefits that we've been talking about, they help us do that better, but it will also prevent us from doing those things that we think we can do without the law. I mean, in terms of passing forward wealth, is more difficult for my, if she was not my wife, it would be difficult for me to sustain my family in the event of my death or difficult for her to assist me in the event of a significant injury or illness or accident.
But there are legal documents in place right now to help facilitate that. There are power of attorney.
Right. Power of attorneys, but it's just not as easy. I mean, in the law, I mean, it would not be as easy to facilitate that. I mean, and I had to give, even because she was my wife, it still wasn't enough. I had to use those additional documents this past summer when I left, because the benefits don't count when you leave and go do something, go to summer camp in the Middle East. You know, your regular insurance won't cover you. And so there was a set of additional documents that had to be done that would have been even more difficult to execute had she not been my spouse. But her just being my legal spouse wasn't enough. And so had I not been committed or married to her, would I have done those things and exposed myself? Probably, just because of the hoops that I had to jump through. And we usually take the path, you know, a lot of people take the path of least resistance. And so it was that because I had the commitment first, I had to make sure that those things were done, not just because legally it was the right thing to do, but It's a rough go. You know, I find it's going to be a challenge for my daughters, if they look at things as clinically as we've discussed, to really say, why do I need to choose a mate? You know, other than, you know, I can have a partner to bounce things off of for business. I can have a partner that's physically compatible with me. I can have a life partner to live with me and share life with, just because socially that's the kind of construct that they grew up in. So they'll gravitate toward that. You know, even after years of kicking it and whatever, they'll want that, those family traditions. They'll want those holiday traditions that they've grown up in. But, you know, will they clinically look at it? Or will they just say, hey, this is a structure? Look, it's going to be a tough decision, especially as you said, the benefits become, the benefits are there. The health benefits are there. I'm covered. I really don't need health insurance to get married. I don't need the ability to have power of attorney. This is my life partner, or this is my business partner. We can execute these documents now, and I'm covered. But You know, will they see value in my marriage and then want those same types of things? And so I guess we become the marriage evangelists. Those of us that have bought into it, regardless of our beliefs, are just kind of the standard bearers for what marriage should be about, even if we believe something different than what people are looking at us. Like, you know, there are people that judge us because of our Christianity, and they may not believe what we believe, but they judge all Christians based on our behavior.
Right.
Look at him, he's at the casino.
So basically you have the fact that, you know, once upon a time marriage made sense. It is now a lot of times not feasible for women to get married these days because the numbers are not there. The fact that there are more women than men, and the fact that there are more women that are professionals and are making more money, and so a lot of men are not comfortable with those things. And this legal binding contract doesn't give you the benefits that it did years ago. I'm just only suggesting that the fact that, you know, that we shouldn't put so much weight on this legal or this public document that says that I must get married, or this social stress that's upon a person because of marriage. I'm saying that there, you know, the benefits that it provided are becoming such that our society are not going to need them. Need this structure as marriage as we did in the past. So
now for American society, I can get that. I agree. But for Black Americans, I disagree. I think now more than ever, we need the structure of the family more than ever, because our community has been damaged by the weakening institution of marriage or the prevalence of marriage in our community. I just think that now more than ever, we need to go backwards and pick up those things that we used to do that worked for us. We need the standard of having a standard of fathers teaching sons the proper way to teach women, to the proper way to dress, the proper way to speak in public, the proper way to behave in our church institutions. The proper move toward marriage and committing to one woman and building a life. You know, so from our community standpoint, I think we need those families to further strengthen or, you know, to further fix the damage that has been done, you know, as it relates to, you know, you pick one.
You know,
we talked a lot about the black community.
Yeah, we talked a lot about the cultural benefits, and we talked a lot about the fact that there are some physical or some contractual benefits as well. But we really didn't touch a whole lot on the financial benefits of marriage in a lot of cases. Two people coming together with two professional lives. But what I find most interesting, and you mentioned the African American family, is that most African American successful men, I'm going to say success is more than $10 million. I think anything below that, you could go in and out of that particular category. But anything over $10 million, I'm going to consider that to be successful. But most African American males that are not choosing African American females. So you're talking about the strong structure of the family, the fact that you need that and it's beneficial. I don't see any benefit though.
Well, but they're choosing marriage. And regardless of what Halle Berry and her husband want to say, those children are African-American and will be looked upon that way, whether they choose to be African-American or black or not. You know, when they leave home and go out into the greater American society, people will think that they are black, and they will be treated thusly. So even if those men are not choosing black women, the result of those relationships are black. And the damage is that we see younger people emulating them but not following through on the marriage piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up with all of these single white moms with black children.
Right.
And then the commitment level, and of course we're blamed for the bad more so than the good. You know, mm-hmm. for every brother that's out there raising his mixed kids, there are 10 or 15 the brothers out there with white, with children with white women that are not. And those are the ones that are more visible to the rest of us. And I just think that commitment to a relationship is better for our community than no commitment at all. And it doesn't have to be professional. It could be, you know, a couple working retail. But, you know, collectively, if they are working together and they are committed to each other, they will come up financially because they have a system. If they're saving $50 a month, that's better than a single woman not saving, or that's better than, you know, financially, that's better than one person not saving or one person attempting to be Santa Claus every time they get to visit their child, and those dollars aren't utilized for the long term. And, you know.
So, yeah. Again, for the record, I want to say that I am not
against I'm not saying I absolutely support them.
Right. And I'm saying I'm not against I'm not against love. I'm not against bonding. I'm not against marriage. I was just only talking about the public contract. You know, why does it that a private relationship need a public sanction when you've agreed to commit to this person and both of you all are enjoying the benefits of, you know, healthcare or 401ks, retirement funds, you have savings, you're both professionals, you have relationships within other people, and all of those things. So I was just, that was the basis of my argument today. And I really enjoyed all of the listeners and for everyone calling in today. And so this is going to conclude the show, but I encourage you to tune in every week. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. And remember to join us next week. What we're trying to do every week is to have an African-American author on during the month of February. And what we're going to try to do, we didn't get a chance to get Dwight Jeffrey in, Mr. Motivator, but we're going to try to bring him on back next week. And we're going to talk a little bit about his book, Success is an Attitude, that can lead you to the discovery of your design or purpose in life. Again, that's Dwight Jeffrey, Mr. Motivator. We're going to try to get him on next week, and I would encourage you to go out there and check out Mr. Dwight Jeffrey. I'm going to have him come on for a few seconds and see if he has anything to say before we end the show today. Dwight, you there? Mr. Jeffrey, you there? Okay, I guess he's dropped the call for now, but we're gonna try to get him back next week to be a part of the show. Again, that's Dwight Jeffrey, Mr. Motivator. Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook.